Hi, my lovely listener, this is Véronique, your host. So before I introduce you to the next guest, I want to make a little announcement. Some of you already know I'm a sound healer now, and I have a new path in my life, and this is fantastic. I love it, and I really want to share my gift with you. So if you're interested about having a sound bath, or if you want to know about sound bath, I do virtual sound bath because I know a lot of you are listening from abroad. So we can do Zoom, we can do YouTube. So if you're looking to relax, realign, and inner peace, offer virtual one-on-one sound healing sessions and online group sound bath designed to help you release stress and restore balance, and using the pure tones of crystal singing bowls and guided meditation, each session is a deeply calming experience from the comfort of your own space. So if you're ready to shift your energy and raise your vibration, visit my website, harmoniousechoes.com, to book your session today. Today I speak with Sylvia. Sylvia is a CFA, Chief Investment Officer for Family Legal Offices, and an indigenously trained shaman with over 30 years of experience in spiritual and energetic healing. She has advised CEOs, power brokers, and mission-driven leaders, helping them move beyond strategy into deep alignment with their purpose and power. Her journey from co-founding a transformational institute in Argentina to managing over $1 billion in assets reflects a bigger message. The true success is found when we unite the material and the spiritual. Hi, Sylvia. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Veronique. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for coming today. So we're going to talk about business and spirituality, my two favorite subjects.
Yeah, your two favorite subjects. Great. Mine too. Aligned.
So yeah, you had a very extraordinary journey. How did you get from managing over 1 billion asset to also practicing as an indigenously trained shaman? Or how did this start? Did you start, I guess you start first being in the business, then the spirituality, or were you always spiritual? And you say, oh, okay, I need to have a career in business, and then you put everything together.
The first interest that I had when I was outside of university was healing. I had a really, and when I look back at that version of myself, I'm like, I can't believe how single-mindedly, the only thing I really cared about was awakening coming out of university. And I said, look, to me, it seems like the purpose of a human lifetime is to wake up, whatever that means to ever, you know, anyone who's listening. For me, it's like you create your own map of what awakening is and who the divine is to you. But it seems to me like we're here to discover our source and what it is to be a human. We're here to experience Earth School. So, okay, let me devote myself wholeheartedly to just the path of the healer. And I did that for the first 10 years after university. And in that path, discovered a lot of different tools of what it means to be a healer. But the most essential thing that I discovered is that healing is really just waking up to the true nature of who you are. The answer of that question, who am I? Like, think about it, like the body, if the body heals, it still is only temporary because we're going to die no matter what. At some point, the body is not going to be healed. You can heal your emotions, but even emotions will continue to change through our lifetime. You can heal your finances, but even that, sometimes they come and go. So what's the one healing that's available to us that doesn't change? And that was the awakening to your true nature. And so for me, the first 10 years of my life were really dedicated to that. And I experienced some deep awakenings myself along the way. And then as I was entering my 30s, I began to have this realization that came to me slowly that it's not enough for healing to be segmented to just certain parts of life. And then there's other parts where we say those have nothing to do with healing, spirit, God, the divine. And it seemed to me like the areas that we really keep apart from the divine is money, sex, and power. Those are the three. Money, yeah. Sex, and power. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to try to merge together some of those areas with the divine and to make my life a kind of experiment in that regard? I like I like to think about it in terms of all of the things of money, sex, and power, but where I have my expertise is in the realm of money.
Yeah, I think it's because when people think about the divine, about God, it's pure. And when people think about money, sex, and power, it's dirty. So maybe that's why, you know, they want to get it separated. But I guess if it does exist in this world, it's for a reason. And we have access to it. We have access to power. We have access to money. We have access to sex. It depends, you know, what you do with it after, right? How you use it. So I think that's why it's really important. How you act around it.
Yeah. They're not inherently bad.
Exactly. No, they're actually very good. what did you do for 10 years? You said you studied how to be a healer. Did you do like Reiki, meditation? What did you do? Because you're a shaman also, right? So how does this work?
Also, I was a co-founder of a school in South America, which is called the Oasis Institute. It's inspired by the Esalen Institute. The Esalen Institute is in Big Sur, and it was one of the great places for the human potential, like, movement. So a lot of what we consider kind of standard core healing practices were really developed at the Esalen Institute. So for example, Rolfing, which is like a form of deep tissue massage, Esalen massage itself, which sometimes is called California massage, which is its own kind of modality, was developed there. Holotropic breathwork was developed there. Gestalt therapy was developed there. The five rhythms, the dance movement of Gabriel Roth, which today is sometimes called ecstatic dance, was developed there. And so we had this idea to bring all of those kinds of healing modalities to South America because they really didn't exist at the time. This was in the 1990s. And so that was the premise of the business that we built. But as a result, I had a lot of exposure to incredible teachers and healers along the way. And one of the things that I was exposed to at a young age was the teachings of Gangaji, she still is alive today. She's a beautiful spiritual teacher. You can learn more about her work at gangaji.org. And Gangaji is from the lineage of Advaita Vedanta, which is the non-dual tradition of India. And its greatest sage is Ramana Maharshi. So a lot of people have heard of Ramana Maharshi, who's really one of the great saints of India. So to have I had all of this exposure to healing, but the primary thing that really influenced my studies as a healer was Advaita Vedanta itself and this sort of non-dual path of discovering who you are beyond the body and who you are beyond the mind. So that's really what I was studying. I was studying whatever it was that we were bringing to the school in South America and teaching. It was like real-time school and business at the same time. But in terms of working with plant medicines, as you know, ayahuasca is really one of the great grandmother plant medicines. And in South America, it's a pillar of the culture. It's something that is not just legal, but it's actually revered in many parts of South America as an incredible tool of consciousness. So I had the opportunity to study and work with some of those ways in my 20s. Most notably, I spent an extensive amount of time with the Santo Daime community in Brazil. I have amazing stories about my time with the Santo Daime community. Really, really beautiful, beautiful tradition that is, it's a syncretic religion that takes ayahuasca, mixes it with Christianity, and just because it's Brazil, throws in a little wrinkle of voodoo.
Of course.
It's like it's spectacular, really. And they have incredible traditions around the drinking of ayahuasca. I was learning just because I was in the environment. We wanted to bring these things to our students. So we would go out there and find the best of the best in terms of teachers and try to bring them to the school to teach workshops. So that was really how I was formed as a healer. And then in the U.S., I did some formal training at a school that was called the Heartwood Institute. It doesn't exist anymore, which is it's just such a pity, but it was located in Humboldt County. It was a residential program. The Heartwood Institute is closed now. Yeah, it's not open anymore. And it was at the time, it was one of the few extended residential programs where you could learn everything from shiatsu to polarity therapy. It was an extraordinary place. And so I did some formal training there.
Okay. And so you work with, you advise CEOs and mission-driven leaders. So how do you think your background in both finance and shamanic, it's complementary for them? They're not like
Yes.
They don't ask questions like, wait, what's going on here? Because they can be very close-minded.
There are a lot of ways to answer that question. Yes, people can be close-minded. That's partly why I think it's important that I was able to finish my CFA charter because, you know, I'm not the smartest, you know, investor out there. I'm definitely not like the most agile trader on the planet. I don't claim to be any of those things, but I understand the language of investing enough to be able to have completed the charter. It's a very difficult course of study. And so I think just people knowing that I have that charter, they tend to listen a little bit more to what I'm saying on the holistic side because they say, well, okay, it's not that you're just completely, you know, making this up. But when you begin to talk to somebody who's maybe a founder or a business leader or CEO, the language of this is not so strange and esoteric once you actually begin to work with somebody. And so, for example, like people say, oh, that's like so crazy. Like, how could you possibly combine shamanism and finance? Well, what a shaman is doing, the word really means to take something that is unseen and make it seen. So you're just bringing things from the shadow into the light. That's really all. You're just removing the veil. And I am just helping somebody to remove a veil in their own consciousness so that they can experience that deeper form of consciousness themselves. And then they can utilize that deeper form of consciousness to make decisions in their life. Think about investing. Investing is a series of decisions. And yes, while we think that those decisions are completely based in math or balance sheets, sometimes they can be. There is another part of decision making, which is, we could say, emotional. You could be driven by fear. You could be driven by greed. You could be driven by FOMO. So even as at the most simple level is what changes in terms of who you are as an investor or how you build your companies if you actually make those decisions from a place of consciousness that is clear and grounded. So at the most basic level, that would be an example of how you begin to bring it together.
So when they come to you, they already know what they're going to get. They already know that there's going to be a lot of spiritual side on your advice.
Not always. I mean, you meet people where they are, right? So it's not everyone is interested in this conversation.
Okay. So you can just advise them for their wealth management and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm capable. I can do that as well. But even that, like, you know, you have to have so much integrity to advise someone on making investment decisions. And I've made every mistake in the book. I've done every wrong thing myself. And so at the very minimal, I have enough experience and enough mistakes that I can say, okay, look, I've been at this place before. I wouldn't rush into this deal. I would take more time with it. Or it looks to me like there's a conflict of interest between these people and I wouldn't invest if that conflict of interest isn't resolved. Or there's something that, you know, this person is pushing you to rush. That's not a good sign. Slow down. And so it doesn't have to be overtly spiritual.
Okay, got it. So let's talk about AI because it's really big right now. And it could disrupt the wealth management. What kind of human skill, you know, you believe that we define the future of financial advising because of AI now?
Sometimes I like to say I think the future of finance will be feminine, but what I mean by that is not that it's like all women, although the wealth transfer that's happening right now is primarily going into the hands of women for the first time in history. So that's an interesting fact. What I mean by that is if we used to value ourselves as financial professionals because of our capacity to trade a stock or to manage a fund or to pick a fund manager or to rebalance a portfolio, you know, there's a lot of the functions, especially as they pertain to public market investing. But it's just obvious AI is going to be able to do that better than we will, by and large.
Yeah.
More and more, we will be able to trust, you know, algorithmic programs and AI to perform these functions. And so I think we're going to see a future, at least as it pertains to public markets, where everything will become more what I call like beta-fied. So it's just, we're not going to be in an environment where people can outperform by picking the right stock or picking the right fund manager, because AI is doing it better than us. And so it's going to create this sort of beatification of public markets. But that's actually good for consumers, because that also means that the cost of being invested in public markets is going to continue to reduce significantly. Custody is already free, if not, you know, a few basis points. Trading is free, not a few basis points. And you're going to see people will have access to these sort of algorithmic AI-enabled trading platforms at very, very, very low cost, much less than you would pay an advisor today. So what does that mean for the industry? The industry has to pivot. Where is the industry then going to be able to provide value for clients? And there are some places where there still is tremendous value. So a lot of clients still really need help with lending, right? So the function of lending is still really important. And I'm not an expert on credit, but I'm not sure that there's going to be a day where we just go online and we get all of our credit needs met. I think we'll still have humans that are, you know, working to obtain credit for us. Trust and estate planning, I think, is more complex. There's a lot of human input into that, a lot of thought that I don't think AI is anywhere near doing anytime soon. And then the last is private market investing, is, you know, how to diligence and invest in a private company. I think that humans will be doing that for a while longer. I don't necessarily think AI is going to be, I mean, I could be wrong on that one, but I think it's going to be a while before AI is better than a human on the private side. So what is the main purpose of an advisor in the future is probably going to be like a financial coach or financial therapist. So somebody who can say, like, you know, how are you feeling about how much you're saving right now? And why, you know, what is it that's keeping you from investing every month some part of your salary into the financial markets? Like, why do you continually, you know, overspend in clothes and overinvest in your retirement? Like, what's the thought process behind that? What are you trying to satisfy inside of yourself? Like, what needs are you trying to meet? Could we meet those needs by being present with yourself in a deeper way, as opposed to going out and spending something? So I think the financial coach of the future is going to be an increasingly important role.
I like that, financial psychology. Yeah, might need that, you know, in the future. I saw in one of your videos that you talk about that there was no narrative about woman awakening. You talk about, you know, the Christ and Mohammed and Buddha. So was it hard for you to be able to actually awaken if you didn't have any example?
That's a great question. I think so. Yeah, I think so, because I had this image in my head that I needed to have this like explosive awakening experience.
Yeah.
And on the other side, I would be like a different person. Like, I'd be like an improved version of myself, and I would transcend human suffering. So, and there are avatars on this planet. I've had teachers that I think are avatars. You know, there are avatars that truly like have these complete, like the combust fully and completely, and they become these sort of realized spiritual beings. But that's very, very, very rare. Most of us will experience awakenings, and at the same time, we're going to have parts of ourselves that are still identified with form and are not awake. That's how you end up with the phenomenon of, you know, a teacher who seems very awake but is sleeping with students.
Yeah,
they're half baked. These are half baked awakened beings. But I had really just this image or this goalpost of like, you've got to have like that full awakening experience. And so I think it might have actually slowed down my spiritual growth in many ways, because I was so hard on myself and so judgmental of my spiritual process and disappointed in the result of my spiritual practice. Whereas if I were to redo everything all over again, I would emphasize more, who are you and how are you living? Not just, you know, can you sit in meditation for 6 hours a day? And can your mind be completely clear of all thoughts? But like, are you, you know, are you how are you doing out there? Like, are you a good friend? Are you a good sister? Are you a good partner? Are you a good mother? Are you a good worker? To me, increasingly over time, that's the more feminine way, is the sort of embodied way of awakening. Is important, and it has value. I always think of it as like a comparison to like the art world, you know, like we used to, you think like the great masters of art were almost always men, and they were creating these, you know, canvases, you know, like the oil canvas, right, is the kind of prototypical, like most valuable piece of art. Whereas, you know, there are women who were fiber artists all those years who were making quilts and, you know, making things with their hands, whose art, or even fashion, whose art wasn't as valued, because that is a more embodied form of art. That is an everyday, ordinary, I can touch it way of looking at art. So it's similar to me. It's like I'm like the fiber artist of the spiritual world. I'm interested in what I can touch and feel and impact every day in the most ordinary way possible.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're talking about, because I got a little awakening on my own this year. I became a sound healer a few months ago, and now I'm doing a lot of guided meditation, and I play crystal balls, and I do a lot of sound bath, and it completely changed my life. It's so different from what I was doing before. I used to work in corporate before, so it's completely
that's a big change.
Something happened. Completely different. So yeah, and I've always been one of my colleagues at where I work is a shaman. So I've always been interested, you know, in this kind of work. And you working with finance, I was like, oh, this is new. Yeah, because usually it doesn't really go together, right? And also it's a very male dominated industry. So I don't know if you feel comfortable in that environment, because I think sometimes, you know, with men, there's a lack of sometimes empathy and sensitivity, or, you know, women have more intuition. That's what I think. So I don't know. Were you able to be in that environment? I don't know if it was easy, or did you have to fight a little bit for your spot there?
No,
it was okay.
Like, I like hanging out with guys.
I like less drama.
Yeah, I'm good. I like working with men. Men are interesting to me, you know, the way they think, the way they move through the world. And I feel like a lot of men have been my champion, even in this moment. I feel like men have really had my back in many ways as I've navigated my careers. No, I don't feel that necessarily. I think a lot of it is how we approach our work. Like, I don't really approach work from that sort of competitive mindset anyway. Because in some way, I really just don't care that much. Like, I mean, I care about like the well-being of a client or an investor, and I want their outcome to be extraordinary. But I know I'm fine. Like, I'm fine. Like, if, you know, if everything were to fall apart in my life tomorrow financially, I always have three or four jobs I know I could do that. Ooh. I would be completely happy with that. And I highly recommend this. Actually, this is a great tool for your listeners, because one of the great hindrances to financial abundance is never feeling like you have enough, right? So yeah, you're always operating from this sort of like scarcity of like, oh my God, I don't have enough. I don't have enough. I don't have enough. I need to get more. I need to get more. And that's like a very viral thought form, especially in American culture. And it's really good to start to become mindful with that. Like, what is that chattering voice that's like, you're not safe, you're not safe, you're not safe? And so one of the ways that I work with that in my own system is I'll actually do like a imagination/meditation where I say, okay, like, let's say your charter gets revoked, right? You don't have your CFA charter anymore. You cannot work as a healer anywhere in the world. You, like, everything's been taken away from you. Every accomplishment is gone, and you have no money. Okay. So I said, what would I do? So I always have like three things I would love to do in that circumstance. So right now, my number one is cashier at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
It's great. And I imagine myself, it's good. Like, do the imagination, imagine yourself in that job. I think how nice it would be to like see what people are buying, you know, maybe like say a kind word to the mom who's stressed with two kids in the car, and like, you know, maybe make a joke with somebody. And by the way, you get a discount on the food.
Yeah.
You get healthy food. Okay, great. So there's one. My second might get taken away by robots. So I have to rework my second. Is I want to push the wheelchair in the airport.
Yeah, that job.
I like that job. Like, I could do that. You know, be nice to people, say a few kind words to them. You know, so like this, I imagine, like, how would I be okay in a situation where it was as much was taken away as possible?
It's such a good way to think and to go around in your life, so you don't worry about missing stuff, and you won't miss
training.
It.
Yeah, so you have to train the brain to know that it's going to be okay when it comes to money and resources. You have to train the brain. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And that doesn't mean just – and I don't say – like if you have $30,000 in credit card debt right now and you have a shopping addiction, I'm not saying this to you. You are not the one who should be saying, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You need to get sober with your finances. But if you're sober and you're not running a huge debt and you're just – like, you know, where you're still anxious and nervous, that's a beautiful practice.
Yeah, train your subconscious, right? Because that's what I learned. Your ego is always the one chattering and being worried. And you have to, train yourself not to worry that much. And being
life
grateful.
Life is full of unexpected gifts. Like, you never thought you were going to become a sound healer. You probably didn't even know what the word sound healer meant when you were in your 20s.
I didn't.
It didn't even exist.
Six
nobody was
ago?
Doing that. No. Yeah, I know for a fact. Like, 30 years ago, nobody was a sound healer. Didn't exist. Alexander Tanous hadn't come up with this whole little thing he's doing right now. It didn't exist. How do I know that? Because I was deep in the world of wellness 30 years ago. Didn't exist. So, great. So, like you didn't even know the way your path was going to diverge so beautifully in your life. So don't worry about it so much. Life is, you know, life will surprise you in beautiful ways.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir here. I totally agree with you. I've never been someone who really worry a lot. But sometimes it can take, you know, when situation happens, it can take over your life, right? But you always have to calm down and you figure it out. We figure it out, you know. As long as, you know, you're alive, there is hope. Anyway, so before we go, do you want to add maybe something I didn't ask or any more advice for the listeners? Because
I'm just curious what your last name words means, because I know Teyat is earth. What is canon?
It's sugar cane.
I thought so.
I'm from the Caribbean.
Yeah. This is a really good name. I'm very curious about people's names sometimes, but that one in particular caught my attention because you're like the sweetness that comes from the earth.
Me? I am of the name.
That's your name. Your name is letting you know you are here to bring sweetness to the earth.
Yeah, it's actually my husband's name. I took his name, and he's the sweetest ever. That's true. He's really, really sweet. So we're from the French Caribbean. So it's a French name from the island.
It's beautiful. Yeah. May you have an abundant and sweet life, Veronique.
Thank you. All right. If you don't want to add anything, thank you for coming to my show today and for giving me your time.
Yeah. If anyone wants to learn more, just go to thesylvia.com. It's Sylvia with a Y. And you can subscribe to my newsletter there.
Yeah. I will put all the information in the show notes. And I hope that people, you know, will contact you and you can help them with their finance and their spirituality.
Thank you, Veronique.
Thank you. Hi, my lovely listeners. Thank you so much for listening to my last episode. I really appreciate it. Some of you already know I'm a sound healer now and I have a new path in my life. And this is fantastic. I love it. And I really want to share my gift with you. So if you're interested about having a sound bath or if you want to know about sound bath, you can just send me an email. I will put everything in the show notes. And this way you can have a look and just contact me through my website. So if you're looking to relax, realign, and reconnect with your inner peace, let's have a virtual sound healing sessions designed to help you release stress and restore balance using the pure tones of crystal singing bowls and guiding meditation. Each session is a deeply calming experience from the comfort of your own space. Shift your energy and raise your vibration. Visit my website, harmoniousechoes.com, to book your session today.